Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken care of. It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh no, what is this? What is this? Matt, Matt George is with us.
Oh my gosh.
Matt, I don't even know how Matt did that.
Oh no!
Stop it! Matt George figured out how to.
It's my guy.
Oh, that is amazing.
Oh, snap.
He's got a shocked Bob Myers as his as a Zoom background. Oh, that's well done, Matt.
Oh, that's classic.
That is well done, my friend.
I'm with KC. Keep Bob Myers on TV just to see what he'll come up with.
I think you guys are forgetting how infuriating that was.
Oh, he's awful, but it's still comedy later.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if the Kings had lost that game to the Clippers?
Oh my gosh!
Oh, man. Oh man, that's amazing.
Great fan base, you know. They're in the right direction. They signed Mike Brown, and oh, what is that? I want to trade Stephen A.
And that's the extent of that man's insight.
Oh man, Matt, do you remember that game at all?
The Clipper game?
Yeah.
I don't remember listening to Bob because I was fortunate enough to be working that night in studio, so I didn't have the audio up very loud. So I remember the game. Mm. I don't remember Bob at all. So I guess I'm a lucky one there. But I specifically remember game 19 that you guys had yesterday. I remember that Laker game.
That was fun.
Vividly. And the moment, of course, with the photo of Domas. But everybody was talking about the Domas Anthony Davis narrative going into that game. And I think, if I remember correctly, AD was asked about that in Sacramento pregame, like during shoot around, and he kind of dismissed it like, yeah, I'm not aware of it, I don't know anything about it, blah blah blah. And then for Domas to absolutely manhandle AD the way that he did in that game too was just icing on the cake of that Kings and Lakers season. Oh, what a great game.
That was great. That was fun. That
was yes fun. It was. Yeah. Yes, it was.
What do you think, Bob?
Great fan base.
That's probably the look he would give you. That's probably the look he would give you. We're killing time. Obviously, football's here, but we're killing time till the start of the Kings season by counting down the top 20 games of the Kings season. Something Kenny started last year. What are you doing to kill time on a podcast where you can't talk about football?
Well, I finished my Pacific Division preview series, talking to all the different hosts of all the different podcasts in the Pacific. Not the divisions matter too much, but I wrapped it up with the Clippers podcast today. And essentially, we were debating, because last year I got in trouble by the Clipper Nation or whatever the hell they're called, because I thought last year that the Clippers were going to be the worst team in the division. Turns out they ended up being the best, so I was wrong. But I'm looking at them this year, and I'm not alone in the fact that I think a lot of people think that after the loss of Paul George, the Clippers are going to be the worst team in the division. Mm. And my guy Dime Dropper, who's the host of Locked On Clippers, was like, whoa, there's no way the Warriors are better than the Clippers. I'm like, okay, I'll agree to the peace flag. I'll shake your hand and agree that we can say the Warriors are going to be the worst team in the division. I got no problem with that. But I think we all came to a kind of a consensus agreement through talking to all of the different hosts of the Pacific Division that if there's a favorite, it's Phoenix. But if there's anybody biting at Phoenix's heels, it should be Sacramento. So the Kings are looked at as arguably the most dangerous team in the Pacific. And you win the Pacific, not that that matters anything other than another banner or another date in the Golden One Center. But you win the Pacific, and you're probably a playoff team in the West. Mm.
I think Dime Dropper's wrong. I think the Clippers are going to be the worst team in the division.
Hmm.
I think the Warriors are a little better than them.
Yeah, that is a kind of an interesting conversation. And what does the worst team in the division look like?
The team battling for play-in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're probably hovering around 500, right?
Yeah.
And that was part of the discussion, too, is the worst team in the division is not catastrophically worse than everybody else. The worst team in the division is 5, 6, 7 games under them in the standings maximum, in my opinion. But I think just like the West, the entire division is going to be relatively close. I think if anybody were to pick a team that runs away with the division and therefore kind of inserts themselves into the top three, top four conversation in the West, I think most people think it's Phoenix just because of their roster. But there's the same massive if with the Phoenix. You could always talk about the injury issues with every single team, but Phoenix has to prove that they can keep their big three together. They had 75 games of Kevin Durant last season. I don't know if that's going to happen again. Hmm. You have the Golden State Warriors. If they lose Steph Curry, they're worse than Portland. And then you have the Los Angeles Clippers, who have been running the Kawhi Leonard load management experiment for the last 3, 4, 5 years, and that hasn't done anything for them either. So, and now they just lost Paul George to help them make up for those games where he's out. So, I mean, the Kings are not that the Kings want to deal with any injuries to Fox or Sabonis or any of their top guys. And we saw how last season ended with injuries to Herter and Malik Monk. But the Kings are the most, I think, well-equipped team in the Pacific to handle the bumps and bruises of a season and a player going down versus all the other teams in the West who are kind of yesterday's teams. And what I mean by that is we're talking about the old generation of stars. Not that LeBron isn't still great, AD isn't still great, and Steph isn't still great. We saw what they did in the Olympics. But the torch has been passed to Anthony Edwards. The torch has been passed to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, to Jalen Brunson, to Nikola Jokic. The Kings are the one outlier in the Pacific of teams that aren't just desperately clinging on to yesterday's generation. And maybe that works in their favor this year.
That kind of in the lines of that, I had a tweet the other day, I've seen some numbers or whatever, and a tweet that De'Aaron Fox, in my opinion, is the best two-way point guard in the game today. And I watched the game last night, you know, over again with the Clippers game, and you know, he was making James Harden's life a living hell. And especially when he decided to turn up and be an on-ball defender, Harden had nothing for him. And when I say two-way, obviously somebody like Drew Holiday is a better defender, in my opinion. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the world, literally, at that point guard position, but he's not asked to average 27 points a night. And of those guys, those point guards who are asked to be the engine offensively, I don't think there's a better two-way point guard than De'Aaron Fox in the NBA. What do you think about that?
Did you mention Shai?
I think he's better than Shai. Shai doesn't play on the ball the way De'Aaron Fox does defensively.
I think Shai's the last hurdle that he has to get over, because he just caught Shai in terms of defensive metrics to where he barely beat Shai to lead the league in steals last year. But I think pound for pound, most people would say that Shai has been to this point a better career defender than De'Aaron Fox has been. Not that he is right now. I think the two are probably neck and neck. They're very, very close. I think Shai and De'Aaron Fox are very, very, very close, period. What Shai has done better than De'Aaron has, I will say, is just straight be the best guy on his team undeniably. Like, and he did that with OKC making the explosive, having the explosive year that they had last year. And this goes back to a conversation that we had like a month ago, guys, which is if De'Aaron Fox is going to make an all NBA team again, and therefore be eligible for a supermax contract, he needs to reach that undeniable status. And I think Shea is in that undeniable status based off of what he's accomplished. I think Jalen Brunson entered the undeniable status with the year that he had last season and how he performed in the playoffs. Fox has had fantastic playoff performances, as we know. And us watching De'Aaron Fox every day, we know how good the dude is. But for some reason, nationally, he is not viewed as that undeniable status yet. So that's what I think keeps him under Shea at this point, but it's very, very close. People should be talking about Fox the same way they do about Shea. They just do not.
Well, and look, the statement was very specific, right? Like, Shea is, if we're doing a ranking, Shea should be ahead of De'Aaron Fox. What he does on the offensive end, being that guy, you know, for the number one seed and all this other stuff. No doubt about it. No argument there. You probably put Jalen Brunson above him or whatever. Probably still put Steph Curry, what, all that stuff. Specifically, I'm talking about a point guard who is top of his class defensively, taking on the toughest assignments every night, and asking them to score 25-plus points per game. Shea's in that category. I think he's the only one. They don't ask Brunson to do that. Steph don't do that. Dame don't do that. Ja don't do that. Whatever other point guards you can think of, they don't do what De'Aaron Fox does on a nightly basis. And I think he's the best at it.
I think there is going to be a point this season, though, of the Kings trying to take Fox off of the best guy as much as they can. Like, De'Aaron had to be that guy for a long time. I think now with the emergence of Keon Ellis and whether or not he's going to continue to start or not, Keon Ellis is the guy that you can run out there with Fox anytime. And Keon's who you're putting on Steph. Keon's who you're putting on Brunson. So he can take kind of some of that focus off of Fox, because as much as I want Fox to continue to be solid defensively, and Mike Brown is going to demand that of him. We all know this. It's Mike Brown. Mike Brown hasn't changed just because he got his contract extension. He's not all of a sudden going back to offense. But I think this year and the success of De'Aaron Fox and the Supermax is going to rely on another step for Fox offensively. Or maybe not even another step isn't even fair. Maybe it's just what Fox was in the playoffs and what Fox was as the start of last season is what he is for close to 82 games from start to finish. That is the dude that he is, where he is flirting with, if not at that 30 points per game scoring average. So I think the focus on Fox and the next level for Fox is just cementing himself as one of the best scorers in the league. You add the defense on top of that of what he can do when you put him on a guy in the fourth quarter, that's just an added bonus. But for Fox, what puts him in the conversation with Shea and with Jalen and with all those top guards in the league is his ability to just straight up score. And I think that's what's next up for him this year.
Is that what makes him undeniable?
I think so. Like, look, this is a scoring-driven, this is an offensively driven league. If Fox can still get steals and defense and stuff like that, that's fun for arguments of just, like, what else does he bring to the table, right? And we could even talk, like, De'Aaron Fox is an underrated passer. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't talk enough about how De'Aaron Fox is good at getting his teammates involved. Mm-hmm. His assists have consistently gone up. Like, he's a good passer. But that is more Malik's role than it is Fox's role, right? Not that Malik can't score, but Malik kind of takes on that responsibility. Sabonis takes on a lot of that responsibility when Fox is on the floor. DeRozan is going to take on some of that responsibility too, because of the crowd that DeRozan draws every time he puts the ball on the floor and gets a look from mid-range. Mm-hmm. So the assist numbers might go down for De'Aaron Fox. The defensive numbers might go down from De'Aaron Fox. But the offense, the scoring, and it's not just fourth quarter scoring. It's all game scoring. It's De'Aaron Fox has 25 points at halftime. It's De'Aaron Fox has 35 points at the end of the third quarter. And the Kings it's either a close game, so here comes fourth quarter Fox, or the game's already over because De'Aaron is undeniable. I think it's more of those performances. It's more of what we were seeing at the start of last season, guys. Remember the first couple of weeks of last season? We were watching De'Aaron Fox ball out, and he was scoring everywhere. Three-pointers. Mm-hmm. Mid-range, at the rim, he's scoring from everywhere. Nothing a defense could do to stop him. And all of us in Sacramento were looking around going, if this, like, we're talking Fox hanging with MVPs in terms of scoring. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what puts him in that undeniable conversation. And then when he gets back to the playoff stage, he'll continue to do it there like we know he will.
Is it just being more aggressive? Is that how he does it? Just like, because you mentioned the three levels of scoring. Does he just need to be more aggressive, do it more frequently, or do it at a higher clip?
Maybe I don't like saying he needs to be more aggressive because I think that suggests that he hasn't been. Mm-hmm. I think De'Aaron is very tactical with where he's changed the most, other than his three-point shot, from when he came into the league to where he's at right now. He's still just as fast as when he came out of Kentucky. But when he started his first two seasons in the league, he was just sprint, get to the rim, and figure it out there. Mm-hmm. Now he's, I know when to use my speed. I know when to explode. So Fox is very cerebral. He's very tactical with how he attacks and when to look for his shots. And he's also very tactical with, hey, I'm going to take a three here to save myself a little bit. Or we're in the dog days of the season. I'm going to rely on my three-point shot a little more tonight. Or defenses are sagging off of me, so I'm going to take this three a little bit more. Which I think, again, the addition of DeMar DeRozan and his ability as an interior scorer is also going to help open up more three-point opportunities for De'Aaron Fox, to where spacing isn't going to be as nearly as big of a problem as everybody wants to make it out to be. I just don't believe it's going to be the case. So I don't think it's a be more aggressive thing with De'Aaron Fox. I think it's just like, again, it's undeniable. It's just get on my back, right? It's like a my time. And even with all the dogs on this roster that the Kings have, right? Keegan's capable of going off. Monk's capable of going off. Sabonis is capable of going off. DeMar, even with all the guys on this roster that can be great for Sacramento, it needs to go without saying by the end of the year yet that, yeah, this is De'Aaron Fox's team. Mm-hmm. Like, all these guys are great, but they all surround Fox. Mm-hmm. They're all building around Fox. And it's funny because a lot of these Pacific Division conversations, a consistent thing that I was hearing from these different hosts is, well, I don't know how the Kings feel about doing this and building around Sabonis. Like, they're not building around Sabonis. They play around Sabonis. Mm-hmm. Sabonis is a foundation of what they do offensively. But Sabonis is a Robin to Fox's Batman. And Sabonis will tell you himself. He'll be the guy in the fourth quarter that says, Fox, tell me where to go. Tell me what to do. And he's going to do the same thing to DeMar. DeMar, tell me where to go. Tell me what to do. This is not DeMontis Sabonis' team. It's De'Aaron Fox's team. That the fact that that is still questioned, I think, is what Fox needs to remove. And he doesn't have to be selfish to do that. He just needs to play like the MVP's capable of hanging with.
Yeah, and Matt, you're spot on. I don't know what he can necessarily do. I mean, I know you laid out some things right there, but he's doing it. He averages 27 points a night. Mm. You know, he's the truth. I watch these games over again, and it's funny that you're saying about like how the perception is of building around Sabonis and stuff. Because I'm watching these games, and I'm like, that's franchise right there. That's the franchise. When talking about De'Aaron Fox, that's the franchise. Sabonis is my guy. He's nice. Malik is my guy. You know that. I love DeRozan. De'Aaron, I look at him. I watch him play. I see him dominate against the Clippers, get 33 points or whatever the case may be. I see him dominating in other games on this list. And I'm like, that's the franchise right there. And it's clear as day to me. It's clear as day to me. I'm not sure why others don't see the same thing, but I mean, this is his team, this is his franchise, this is his city, to be honest with you.
It's because he doesn't do their podcast.
That could be the case.
that also might be true. No, I think it's also a stage thing too, to where there is a world where, with the addition of DeMar DeRozan, the Sacramento Kings are such a good team, a la, like, you remember the Atlanta Hawks from a handful of years ago, where it was like Al Horford and Kyle Korver and Teague and that team that was first place in the Eastern Conference, like had an unbelievable year. I think everybody still looked at that team and went, wow, what a great team. They play really well together. I don't know how much of a championship contender that is. So maybe there's a world where De'Aaron Fox continues to be the 27-point-per-game scorer that he is, and with the addition of DeMar DeRozan, the maturity of Keegan Murray, and the Kings able to stay healthy, that the Kings finish as a top-three seed again in the West and are a 53-54-win team. Like, let's say they achieve that with Fox being about the same player offensively that he was last season. If that's the case...
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, and I don't think, like, that would be phenomenal for us here in Sacramento, but I don't think people are giving De'Aaron Fox that credit. Now we're talking about everything that I just laid out, the DeMar edition or whatever. Like, to me, what is going to put the Sacramento Kings truly in the contendership conversation up there with OKC and with Minnesota and with Dallas is going to be him being, again, reaching that. You talk about the franchise status. Like, we see it. We go, man, that's franchise, but we see it in Sacramento. But they don't see that around the league for some reason because they're just not watching enough, or he's not doing enough, or that warrants somebody on social media going, like the Kevin O'Connors of the world on social media, posting a clip and going, oh my God, did you see what De'Aaron Fox just did? We saw elements of that a couple seasons ago, but not enough. De'Aaron Fox is not as much of a household name as he needs to be in the NBA. And it's not his fault. I think it's partially where he plays. And it's also because there's so many unbelievably talented guards in this league that he's got to separate himself from the pack a little bit, like Jalen Brunson did with the Knicks. So to me, what gets the Kings into true contendership status is De'Aaron Fox elevating himself to that 30 points per game. And it's only a 3-point jump. A 3-point jump per game is actually pretty significant, but it's not like we're asking him to suddenly become something that he's not overnight. He's capable of scoring 30 points per game. He just needs to go out and do it. Like that, I think that's just what's missing.
I mean, he did for like a whole half the year, it felt like. And then I'm not really sure what kind of happened after that. Shot stopped dropping. And I do also wonder, like, how does DeMar fit into all of this? Like, DeMar is an automatic 20-point-per-game scorer. And if you're tacking a few extra points onto De'Aaron and making him stand out as the dude on this, like, that's... It'll be interesting to see how this offense gets distributed. And it just could be we could bring back that word. Could be talking about pace all year long. How quickly is this team getting up and down the floor?
Well look, one of the things, and we're 3-4 games into this thing, but one of the things that keeps kind of sticking out like a sore thumb is in these wins, and their high point totals and all this other stuff, is Harrison Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Barnes gives you 20-some points.
So the key to this season is Harrison Barnes.
Well, it's it isn't, but what that says to me is when they got that production, they were electric on the offensive end. The problem was Harrison Barnes would give you 22 and then give you 4.
Well, that was the case in the game I accidentally watched, the other Lakers
Harrison
game.
Harrison had a good game that game, too.
Well, and not just Harrison. Like, I think De'Aaron had, not to, you know, step on, it was like 40-something, and Malik had 20-something.
That's what I'm saying. So, and what I'm getting at with that is, yeah, you get that, you got Sabonis and Fox doing their thing, Monk doing his thing as well. You need that other guy that was going to be consistent for you. It was supposed to be Harrison. When it was Harrison, they were good. He wasn't always there. That's where DeMar comes in, because it's almost always going to be DeMar always going to show up. And now we're talking about a good team. Now we're talking about a 50-win team, because I promise you, if Harrison averaged 18, 19, 20 points a night, they would have been a 50-some win team. Now they've got that guy in the Harrison role that's going to average 18, 19, 20 points per game. Fox is still going to do his thing. Sabonis is still putting up triple-doubles. And you got Monk, Murray, Herter, whoever, filling it. Keon Ellis had a big game the other night when I was watching. You get all those guys filling in. That's where you get your 50-plus wins at.
I actually think DeMar and De'Aaron are going to give each other something that maybe they've never had in their career, which is the attention on somebody else like they're the number one guy. And I think more often than not, De'Aaron being on the floor with DeMar is going to give DeMar the opportunities to have the capability to score like a number one when he's not needed to, if that makes sense, right? Like Fox and DeRozan playing, again, it goes back to the conversation that I had with an NBA assistant coach about this. De'Aaron or DeMar DeRozan fills the one hole that the Sacramento Kings offense had from 2 years ago when they were the best in the league. If they got taken out of their sets, there was only one dude that they felt confident getting the ball to score, and everybody, including the defense, knew it. It was De'Aaron Fox. And still, De'Aaron was unstoppable from mid-range and won clutch player of the year. Now you add DeMar to that fold to where Fox either doesn't have to be on the floor for the Kings to survive that, or if they're on the floor at the same time, somehow one of the two of them can slide under the radar. There's a chance that De'Aaron Fox or DeMar DeRozan at any point can slide under the radar on this team. Like, that's what they give each other. So, like we're talking about, it's still De'Aaron Fox's team. I think DeMar DeRozan knows that. I don't think I would permanently write in ink that DeMar is going to average 20 points per game this season. I don't think I need to. Mm-hmm. If his scoring goes down, it's not because he's less efficient. It's not because he's having a down season. I think some people are going to look at the numbers and misconstrue that because they're not actually watching. It's because DeMar is filling a role with this group. And DeMar simply being on the floor is going to open up opportunity for Fox. And if it doesn't, that means Fox is still drawing so much attention that DeMar going to eat, Keegan going to eat, everybody else is going to eat. Mm-hmm. And that is the franchise status. That is the superstar status that Fox has around the league from defenses and players who have to respect him, that maybe just the media and maybe the fan base and the casual NBA fan just hasn't caught up with yet. If De'Aaron Fox can draw that much attention away from DeMar DeRozan, then we know that Fox is the truth. And it's very possible he does.
Did you catch that little interesting note in the Kevin Herter press release? I didn't catch it. James caught it, and he read it to us when the Kevin Herter injury update.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Kings forward, Kevin Herter.
Oh.
And I admittedly did not catch it. We read it the second it came through, and I just read it, and Kings forward, Kevin Herter, progressing towards a return to play, blah, 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 blah. And it was James that pointed out yesterday it says right here, Kings forward, Kevin Herter. Doesn't see Kings guard. Kings two guard, no, it says Kings forward, Kevin Herter. And that kind of got our attention, like, oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Well, to the surprise of absolutely no one, James Hamm has a great eye and catches that. That went completely over my head. Nope, did not catch that at all. But, guys, I still got questions. I mean, he's tall enough to play the forward position. I have so many questions about Kevin Herter's ability to both play a forward and to come off the bench. And it's not that it's laced with doubt. It's just laced with curiosity. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it looks like. And I've used the give Kevin Herter the starting two guard spot back simply because I know more of what Keon Ellis can do off of the bench. I know more of what Malik Monk can do off the bench in any capacity with any lineup than I do about Kevin Herter coming off the bench as a three. I just think it's more specific what you're looking for and needing from Kevin than it is for Keon and Malik, who, again, can come in and impact the game with whoever they're playing with. But if the Kings, I think it makes sense with the logjam of guards that they have on this roster. Kevin Herter's, if he's going to get opportunity, it's going to be as a three. Mm-hmm. I think it can absolutely work offensively. No matter where Kevin Herter plays, I think it'll work offensively because he spaces the floor. The question is always going to be defensively with Kevin. He's big enough or tall enough, I think, to guard threes, but is he laterally quick enough? That's always been kind of a question with him. I'm very interested to see what Kevin Herter looks like playing the three, who he's playing the three with, and who he's defending at the three in preseason and in training camp.
Well, to that um, to that whole scenario. And real quick, with him defending threes, it may be, I don't know, I'm not going to say he's going to turn into Scottie Pippen, but it may help him out a little bit where, like, if foot speed is the issue, it may be harder for a guy like Kevin Huerter to guard quicker shooting guards than, I'm not going to call them lumbering, but the taller they are, they kind of, the speed goes down a little bit. So sure, that might help them defensively just a little bit. But I don't know if you guys saw to this whole point of starting two guard and all this other stuff. Did you guys hear what Zach Lowe said on his podcast?
I didn't. I think about yesterday. The Kings? I didn't.
They said him and somebody were talking back and forth about, like, I don't know, sleepers or something like that. And the other guy was like, yeah, I really like Keon Ellis. And Zach was like, oh, you stole him from me? Like, I was feeling the same way. I love him too. And he said something to the extent of, you know, I've talked to some people out there. I've talked to coaches, and the coaches, like, really love Keon Ellis. And don't be surprised if he gets that fifth starting spot. Like, mm-hmm. don't be surprised. And you combine that with the game that I was watching yesterday, and he was looking really good in the starting two guard spot. And I'm starting to warm up to that idea, especially with our little nugget that we found here with forward Kevin Huerter.
Mm-hmm.
That would all work. You keep Malik mm-hmm. coming off the bench. Keon is your starter and your defensive guy on the perimeter. Kevin Huerter is coming off the bench as your forward. And then you kind of rotate throughout the game with that. I think that might be the number one option, I think, for me.
I still am of the belief that you start with your best foot forward, and you're one of your best players on this roster, undeniably, is Malik Monk. And I can say that while at the same time being able to say that out of the three, the only choice as the starting two guard for the Kings that would surprise me is Malik Monk. Hmm. Like, just because of how I think settled into his spot that Mike Brown is. Like, Mike loves what Malik does off the bench, knows it works, and is going to stick with that. Now, Malik also told us after signing his contract in his little press conference, he also told us that he has a voice here, and he's going to speak up if he feels he needs to start. He wants to start. He's going to do whatever the Kings ask of him to do. He's a good teammate in that sense. But he said, I'm going to speak up, and I'm going to speak my mind. If I feel like I should start and I need to start, then I'm going to speak my mind. So we'll see if that plays a factor into any decision-making or anything like that. But if there was a betting favorite for who's the starting shooting guard for the Sacramento Kings, I think it's Keon Ellis. Mm. And I don't think it's because of how he played last season. It's because of the player that he is, right? You can start him, like we kind of talked about earlier in this conversation, you can start him defending the opposing team's best guard right out of the gate to free up first 5 minutes before Mike. Like, you can do that. But you also have a freedom with Keon more than any of the other guards, other than De'Aaron Fox. You have a freedom with Keon where you can play him in any scenario and expect the same thing. Like, you can just expect Keon Ellis to be a dog defensively, to work hard on a consistent enough clip, like a third.
I couldn't tell if it was Matt or if it was me.
I think it's us. Yeah.
It's you? We're out?
Oh, we're down.
Oh, are we on the air? We're on the air?
Two guard spot. That's why I would say, as of right now, I would bet Keon's a starter.
Were you talking that whole time? That's amazing.
Yeah, I think our internet dropped for a second.
Matt, our internet... That was amazing, Matt. That was the smoothest thing that's ever happened in the history of radio. Matt, I think our internet went down and it took all of us out of the stream for a brief second.
Okay.
And
Chatty House says they heard him the whole time though, so we're good.
That's amazing.
So we're the only ones.
Yeah, I guess it's just us. Like, I'm like, you kept like breaking, but I had the little weird rainbow thing. I'm like, oh. If my internet crashes, like if my computer crashes, we're in big trouble. And then we all went black at the same time. And then we come back and you're just cooking.
Well, first off, shut up. I host a solo podcast. I can talk for 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Number two, I kind of noticed that it froze, but it looked like both of you weren't looking in the camera. You were both looking at computer screens. And I'm like, either they see something that's really like breaking news, or I'm boring the hell out of them. But I'm on a roll, so I'm going to keep going.
I was checking to see if my computer was working, and it was. So that was weird. But it's a good break in the action to remind everybody, including Matt, to go to ESPN1320.com, click on the contest link, and enter to win tickets to WWE SmackDown.
Ooh. I can win?
You don't work here. You absolutely can win. Why couldn't you? WWE SmackDown, Golden One Center, Friday night, September 20th. Again, you can enter to win tickets right now over at ESPN1320.com. These are great lower-level seats. We got them for you. Again, ESPN1320.com. Click on the contest link and enter to win tickets to WWE SmackDown.
There we go.
I thought about it in my brain. We got lucky that you came back right as I was wrapping up, because there's a scenario where I had full control of this show.
I'm the captain now.
Which would have been awesome. We would have trusted you with it. Well, we can ask you the most pressing question of the day. Who wins a 7-game series between the Chiefs and the Ravens?
I heard this debate earlier. It's actually right when I started tuning in today. I was a little bit late to the show, and I heard it, and I understand Casey's point completely. I also agree what Jesse was saying too. Like, football is just different. And I actually, that's one of the things that I hate about the NBA playoffs is the fact that because you have these 7-game series, more often than not, you know the favorite's going to win, because it's hard to upset somebody 4 times out of 7 games. And that's what makes the NFL exciting. It also makes the NFL terrifying for a team like the Patriots, who absolutely was the best team in the league that year, one of the best teams in history, and lost 1 game, and it happened to be the biggest game. So who wins in a best-of-7 series between the Ravens and the Chiefs? My heart says Ravens. My brain says Chiefs.
That doesn't really matter.
I'd be rooting for the Ravens so hard, though.
That's all in good fun. In reality,
game.
Who do you think's going to the Super Bowl?
I think the Niners are going back.
Okay.
I think the Niners are winning it.
I think that's okay.
I think we're guaranteed to get a rematch again. But I think this rematch is going to be, I think it's going to be Niners Ravens.
Can you imagine after all of this, it's the 49ers that keep the Chiefs from the three-peat?
Oh, man.
You'd be even more unbearable.
Happy day when Jesus was.
Okay. All right.
I also think, like, Casey, because you guys were also talking about earlier about like the disrespect towards Brock Purdy, but more people are starting to come around. Like, I don't know when it happened. Maybe it happened last season. I think the Niners might be the biggest villain in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, as a team, I think they might be the biggest villains. I don't think anybody outside of like Niner gang around the world, but what I mean is, like, nobody outside of Northern California, Santa Clara, San Francisco, the Bay, really wants to see the Niners be successful. A lot of people I just hear talking about, like, oh, they had their chances. They've had their chances. Like, oh, who cares? Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Debo. I'm tired of hearing about all them. Who cares? It's somebody else's time. It's the Ravens' time. It's the Lions' time. It's the Packers' time, right? I think the Niners have entered that category to where we are obviously so focused in on them because they are rightfully looked at as one of the best, if not the best team in the NFL. But outside, I think everybody's kind of like, no, I don't think a lot of people want to see the Niners succeed. And maybe it's jealousy or whatever the case may be. I think the Niners have reached that villain status around the league to where whoever the Niners play, the majority of the nation is going to be rooting against them.
Well, to all those people, I got 2 words for you. I ain't going to say it.
Oh, okay.
I was just waiting. Bobby about to get blocked. Bobby said, "Do those Cowboys not the villains?" Bobby about to get blocked.
Bobby always says something crazy.
Cowboys haven't been villains forever. Cowboys are just they're the joke. Like, they've always kind of been a joke. Like, no one's taken them seriously enough.
We think there's a real scenario where they don't make the playoffs. Now, Kenny went there. I didn't. I went with the Eagles, which also feels like a little bit it feels like a little bit of a reach. But we're that's the way this league works. Like, teams you expect to be good, they're not always good. Like, they fall back a little bit. And You know, the Eagles went through some really weird stuff at the end of last year. The Cowboys are in a really weird position, but they also lost a lot of guys. And so, there's going to be, like, good teams that don't make the playoffs, and those might be one of them. Could be two of them. I doubt it. But I think at the very least, at the end of today's show, I'm confident one of those teams is not making the playoffs.
Well, if the debate is out of those two, who's not making it, who is the other one the biggest threat to the Niners in the NFC, or is it
Detroit?
No,
I don't think so. No, I think
it's Detroit.
I think it's most likely Detroit. I'm not
there Atlanta
yet.
Too.
Oh, I swear to God. I'm not Atlanta.
I'm with you, D-Lo. I don't see it.
I'm not educated. I need to watch more games. I just cannot get there with you guys in Atlanta. But I'll watch more games. I'll be better.
Watch more. Don't be a stat hoe.
Stat hoeing. I think that was originally coined. I don't want to say who. I don't want to get her in trouble. Like, she's a TV personality now. Are you excited for the kickoff of the season? You've got Ravens Chiefs tonight. Are you hyped for that?
I'm hyped for that. There's only one thing about the start of the season that I'm disappointed about. Uh-huh. And it's the fact that because I'm going to be at Levi's Stadium, I'm not going to be at Sky River Casino.
Oh, yeah. We'll miss
you. That's the only thing I'm disappointed about. But I will be at Levi's, myself and Kevin John. It's on ABC 10. Sorry, DirecTV mm-hmm. users. Why are you still on DirecTV? Go to YouTube TV. Figure it out. Figure out your life. Figure that out. But we will have the game, and then we have a special edition of Toyota Sports Extra after the game from Levi Stadium. So pull through, stick around, and join us for that. But I can't wait, man. I'm the kind of person, and I think D-Lo, we've talked about this before. I hate going to stadiums and arenas when I'm out of season because it just makes me impatient. Mm. And the fact that the Niners have training camp right behind and right outside of Levi Stadium every year, it drives me nuts because I just want to see a game there. So pulling up to Levi's on Monday for the first time with the crowd out there and the tailgate and everything, I can't wait.
Shout out to Matt George, who's the only person disappointed he's going to the Monday night football opener and not our live show. That's terrific. Before you go, though, Friday night, I think I know where you're going to be Friday.
Game of the week is Roseville at West Park.
That's
for the
not
first
what I
time.
Thought you were going to say.
No, because they play Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Grand Intercom. I know. Okay. It was supposed to be our game of the week, but it was on Saturday at like 2 p.m.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I realized that a couple days ago. They're getting Saturday afternoon game.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Which is shameful. That matchup is so big. That needs to be on a Friday night under the lights, but mm-hmm. Oh well.
Great stuff, Matt. As always, we appreciate you. Make sure you're subscribed to the Locked On Kings podcast, and of course, check out the incredible coverage that these guys coming up following the 49ers and the Jets. ABC 10, Monday Night Football.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.